One of the things you're seeing in the news a lot right now is return to office mandates, RTO. A lot of us know RTO or WFH, work from home. And you're seeing companies, big and small, saying, hey, we need you in the office. Need might be a strong word. We want you back in the office. So you're seeing a lot of folks from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to Birmingham, Alabama, to Medford, Oregon, returning to office. They're returning to downtown high rises. They're returning to corporate, urban sprawl, corporate parks, whatever the case may be. A lot of people are returning to office, and it's begrudgingly. It's very clear and very obvious that after the pandemic, there were so many people who not only adjusted to work from home, but realized it was possible to have a positive economy and still work from home. And it's hard to put, proverbially, it's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube. And with the start of 2025, happy 2025, everyone, there's a lot of dread, not just in terms of politics or in terms of having to pay bills or student loans, all the things that come with it, but just in general, there could be a turn of the new year and a lot of folks just feel like, I gotta do this again. Like that midlife crisis, I gotta do this again. Especially once when you get to a certain age, right? When you're in your 30s, 40s, whatever the case may be, you kind of start to go, golly, like, is this it? Is there more? And having a return to office mandate tacked on to so many different aspects of the hardships of life just feels kind of sucky, if we're being honest. And look, I want to start with this. There's a true privilege that we need to acknowledge when it comes to working from home. There are so many Americans. I don't have the exact percentages. I think it's like 13%, 15% of Americans that work from home. I try to pull it up here. I think at the height of the pandemic, it was closer to 1 in 4, maybe even as many as 1 in 3 individuals were working from home or working in a non-traditional space, right? Whether it's like entry-level things like you're an Uber driver, you did Uber Eats for a little bit, or you worked from home to one degree, even if it was just one day a week. I think the Department of Labor Statistics defined it as if you work from home even one day a week, that counts as being a remote worker. So I don't know all the ins and outs. And look, how we define this, of course, changes based off of different aspects because the pandemic was just such an unreal thing that we haven't even fully defined what it means to be a work from home worker. But we need to acknowledge that there is a huge privilege in working from home. And a large majority of Americans, and we're just talking within the U.S., we're not talking globally, but a large percentage of Americans simply are not able to work from home. Point blank. I went to a grocery outlet here in the city. Shout out to Grocery Outlet. I used to shop at them back when I lived in Seattle years ago. So it's funny being out here in the East Coast and seeing Grocery Outlet. Like, dang, they're out here. I went to Grocery Outlet. And even just walking around, I was like thinking to myself, like, oh, yeah. If you work here at Grocery Outlet, if you're not, even if you were a manager, honestly, you cannot work from home. That's just not how it flies. You can't ring people out from home. So we have to just acknowledge the fact that so many Americans simply do not have that option. And when we talk about people having the ability to work from home, even if it's just one day a week, even if it's just 8 hours out of 40 hours, that is freaking huge. That is a really, really good thing. And if nothing else, we're moving in the right direction. For years and years and years, my mom, she worked out of the home, right? And when you work out of the home, you have to contend with so many things, especially if you're like a parent. You know, you got to work with if you have elderly parents, if you have children, you know, blah, blah, blah. But technology has really allowed us the ability to have a lot of the work done for us. And it has its pros and cons, no denying it. But technology does allow us so many abilities to be able to work in spaces like our home or shared spaces, whatever the case may be. With that said, I can't really speak upon or can't really speak to being in the for-profit space. There are a lot of for-profits that are really the ones mandating this from Walmart, Amazon. You've seen, I think, Microsoft, some of the big organizations, to construction teams, right? If you work in construction, glass making, depending on what aspect of the arts, tourism, you really need people coming and going. And so you might not be able to work remotely in that particular respect. But in my opinion, and this is probably an opinion I'm probably going to die on. There are not too many hills that I'm willing to flat out die on, but this is definitely one of them. Nonprofits have an obligation to offer hybrid opportunities at all costs. There is nothing about the idea of having hybrid work opportunities that should be shocking or should cause any type of anger or outrage. Point blank. We oftentimes talk about in the nonprofit space how the pay is not good or the ability for advancement is maybe not good or how you really put your heart into the mission that can cause burnout. We just had episode 55, the previous episode had Mackenzie Riley on the show, and she really explained so well how burnout in the nonprofit space is so much different from burnout in different areas because you have a lot of times a dedication to the mission. Even if you switch jobs every 3-4 years, right? A dedication to helping individuals that are not bodily abled, or being able to help individuals pay their bills, or being able to serve as a animal sanctuary, whatever the case may be, or advocacy. Maybe you do LGBT advocacy, whatever the case may be. You can put your heart into the mission, and that can sometimes, compared to working in a for-profit space, cause you to burn out in a different way, simply because you are to one degree or another trying to change the world. You're trying to change it, and even if it's just a small increments. And because of that, there can be a lot of quote unquote negative downsides or negative aspects for being in the nonprofit space, where you may not feel like you're able to get the full advantages compared to if you were a for-profit corporate lawyer, whatever the case may be. So I've contended very strongly, and I haven't taken this stance lightly, but I've taken very strongly over the last 2-3 years, that nonprofits have an obligation to offer hybrid working opportunities at all costs. Now, that's not to say that everyone can do it, right? You may not be able to do it. But if you have a board, if you're a CEO, if you're an executive director and you have a board and you aren't constantly talking about offering hybrid opportunities, I don't feel like you're doing your job, flat out. I don't feel like you're doing your job. And I've gotten a little bit of pushback from some folks that say, I work in social services, I work with clients, or I have an organization that really specializes in that, and we do people to people. I totally get it. I totally get it. But there should still be a window of opportunity for your workers to be able to work from home at least one day a week. At least one day a week. It's not only for the health of those workers, but it's a selling point for bringing on quality talent. I talked about in a previous episode, episode 15. Let me see. Do I have the name of that one? I think I pulled it up. Let me make sure I got the title of that episode. 4-Day Work Week, Raise App, The Giver's Book Review. That was a really good one. That was a episode. It says episode 16. Was it 15 or 16? The cover art says 16, but I have it listed as 15, whatever the case may be. I had an episode, in that episode, I talked about the 4-day work week and how the idea of moving to a 32-hour work week is one that we as a society need to be moving towards regardless. We need to be moving towards that. The 40-hour work week is outdated. There's just no way around it. And I do believe nonprofits are in a very unique position to lead or be at the forefront of introducing a 4-hour work week. But right now, I think that's put it on the back burner just a little bit. This is something where there are a lot of people that have been talking about this forever and ever and ever. I think there's still a couple years away from that because we just did have a global pandemic. And I think at the forefront, on the front burner, is the idea of working from home. And if you are a nonprofit, you should be exploring that as much as possible. In my opinion, I believe workers need at least 2 days. But there are a lot of nonprofits that will push back and say, we can't offer any. So, of course, the middle ground of a negotiation would be 1 day. I'm okay with that. But I really would like to see nonprofits go towards at least 2 days not being in the office. Because even if you work with clients, there's something about just go to your home or go to a coffee shop or whatever the case may be. Just to get away from the noise, get away from the gossiping. I just did an Instagram post about the ins and outs of 2025 nonprofit. Get away from the gossiping, get away from the loud noises, get away from the commute. No matter where you live, whether you live in rural Nebraska and your commute's 10 minutes open road, or you live in New York City, getting away from all that to answer emails, to think of projects, to really rattle your brain so that you really can be a better worker. So much of life is about labor and the betterment of society so that future generations can really make it, really make a better tomorrow. And we got to do that today. And I believe the idea of return to office mandates are kind of silly. In fact, they're not even kind of silly. A lot of them are silly. And nonprofits are at the forefront and can do a really good job of making work from home a stable, consistent foundation for, honestly, years and if not generations to come. Listen, I want to get out of here. I'm not sure I'm going to do this every single episode, but I want to do 5 fast minutes. I try to keep myself in a position of doing a lot of these podcasts really, really, not necessarily quickly, but giving you information because you're busy. You've got kids, you've got families, you've got a lot of shit going on. So I'm going to try to do 5 fast minutes. And I'm going to do it with simply my podcast as a whole. It's 2025. Again, Happy New Year's, everyone. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're feeling good. And my 5 fast minutes are related around what I have for 2025 moving forward with this podcast. We're going to have a lot more guests. I can tell you that. I was talking to, I think it was it McKenzie or was it Nikki Fiacco? It was one of my previous guests. And honestly, it might have been Ezra. It might have been my son. And I talked about how when I first started a podcast, one of the things is I was very, very adamant on not having any guests. Not because I didn't think I could interview people properly, not because I didn't have a Rolodex of people to turn to. I wanted to make sure that if you listen to this podcast, whether this is your first time ever listening to this podcast, maybe this is your first episode ever, or you've been listening to the very beginning, I wanted to make sure that once I started interviewing guests, I had a solid foundation, a smooth track record of delivering quality podcast episodes that you can enjoy. Because again, we're all busy. You don't want to get on a podcast and waste any time. I'm listening to a lot of new podcasts. I'm thinking of trying to start a podcast network. I'll talk about that here in a little bit. And as I'm listening to different podcasts, you can tell that there are many folks that are still very new. And not to say that I'm an expert, because listen, there's the Joe Rogans, the Adam Carollas. I can't believe I mentioned Joe Rogan. There's all these people out there that have been doing podcasts forever and ever and ever, and they are really freaking good, no matter which way you feel about them. A lot of them are really good, and they know who they are and what they are. But I wanted to make sure that I was in a position to give you quality guests, quality interviews, and not waste any freaking time. I'm tired of wasting time. It's 2025. We aren't doing that anymore. And one of the big things in terms of having more guests is if you have someone in your space who you think might be interested in being a guest on a Nonprofit Insider podcast, email me, DM me, text me if you have my number. Let me know. It doesn't really matter because I want to be able to get them on. We are now compensating We are now compensating guests for being on the podcast. So it's not much, you know, it's not a whole lot of money, but one of my big desires was to compensate guests for being on the show. And so right now we are able to offer $20 for every single guest that comes on the show. Again, not a lot, right? It's I'd like to be able to offer $200. And one day maybe I'm able to offer $2,000 to our guests for being on the show. But for now, it's $20. And so people that are interested in being on the show, I want to compensate people for their time. I love having my guests, and I appreciate all the previous guests that came on for free. They really built a solid foundation, and those folks are like founding fathers. Founding members of the podcast. But now that we're in 2025, we're compensating guests. We're giving money. No more freestyles for free, as they say in the hip-hop community. So listen, that's all for now. Those are a quick fast 5 minutes. I might start doing that more as a way to end these uncut series episodes. We appreciate you. Be sure to follow us on TikTok. I'm actually doing a lot of videos on TikTok now. And be sure to follow us on Instagram. That's, of course, where we get the large medium. And we'll see you there. Happy New Year, everyone. Take care.